The views and opinions of today's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of the TJRS Radio Network. Thank you for being a loyal listener and enjoy the show.
Online radio at its best. You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still like dust, I'll rise.
Good morning, and welcome to the serious side of the J. Ryle Show, the show where we discuss politics, social issues affecting people of color, and every now and then a little comedy as well. Now here's your host, J. Ryle.
Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction, and good morning. Today is October 27, 2024, and here are the topics that will be discussed on this week's edition of the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show.
We need all of you, because right now, as you know, this race is close. It's too close for my liking. And I came out here to Michigan because I am someone who takes her own advice to heart. I know that if we want to help this country finally turn the page on the politics of hatred and division, we can't just sit around and complain. No, we've got to do something.
What are your feelings, and let me start with the women here, about Kamala Harris?
She's a woman of color. I'm not putting her down because of that, and I'm not putting her down because she's a woman. I'm not a feminist, so I'm sorry. But at the end of the day, I don't think that she has the personality. I don't think that she has what it takes to go up against Putin and go up against these other presidents that are built for this. I don't want to be scared because my president is scared. I want my president to feel secure and manly and about it.
I heard about that. They were saying I was, like, threatening. I'm not threatening anybody. They're the ones doing the threatening. They do phony investigations. I've been investigated more than Alphonse Capone. He was the greatest tank. No, it's true. We have to think of it. It's called weaponization of government. It's a terrible thing.
So,
Brett, I'm sorry, and with all due respect, that clip was not what he has been saying about the enemy within that he has repeated.
Retired Marine General John Kelly, who served as Donald Trump's chief of staff for a year and a half, in his own words on tape, sounding all of the alarms about Donald Trump's lack of character and basic fitness for the office.
Online radio at its best.
Father, we come before you, lifting up the coming election. Your word says in Daniel 4:17 that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he will. Lord, we ask that your will be done in this election. Guide the people with discernment to choose wisely, allowing the right candidate to lead the nation according to your purpose. We pray for wisdom and clarity for voters, that they may make choices that honor you. And may your will be done not only here in the United States, but across all the nations of the world. In Jesus' name, amen.
347-850-1272 is our caller number. 347-850-1272 is the caller number. It is the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TJRS Radio Network online radio. And it's best, of course, I'm J. Ryle. Thank you so much for being a part of what we do every Sunday. Glad you guys are on board. And as always, I never share this stage by myself. My brother from another mother is in the house, even though he's on vacation. He's stepping away because he understands how important this upcoming election is. His voice is one of those most powerful voices that need to be heard during this time of the season. The one and only Mr. L to the E to the S is in the house, sir. Good morning. How are you? Mr. L.E.S. I promise you, Mr. Elias is in the house. Mr. L to the E to the S, are you there? Maybe he's having some issues with his mic, I'm not sure. But he is here. You never know with this crazy place. 347-850-1272. I am hoping that I am actually being heard. Let's see here if I'm getting some feedback from some folks. Okay, let's see here. Let's see what's happening. Hopefully you guys can hear me. If not, please let me know. And you never know with this thing. 347-850-1272. Still, yes, is here. I promise you his mic's not on, but that's okay. We have a lot to talk about. We're 9 days away from this election. 9 days. And you have to get out to vote. You have to get out to vote. So at the end of the day, your voice needs to be told. You need to be heard. We're 9 days away. Today's show, we're going to talk about a couple of things, a lot of things, actually. We're going to talk about how some African Americans are out there against Kamala Harris. It is amazing when you hear these people talk. It is simply amazing. Let me see, can I get the man back in here? Mr. L to the E to the S, are you there? Well, we'll try to work on trying to get his mic on because we are not hearing him at all. But we have a lot to talk about. You know, President Obama, he's been out there on the campaign trail. Michelle Obama, she hit the campaign trail the other day. So we have a lot to get into this morning, folks. So I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to try to work out some of the issues that we're having with the audio from Mr. Elias. And we'll step out. We'll take a news break. And we'll be right back after this. It's the Sirius Side, 347-850-1272. We'll be right back after this.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. The presidential campaigns are focusing on key swing states this weekend. Kamala Harris will be in Philadelphia today after campaigning in Michigan yesterday with former First Lady Michelle Obama. The joint appearance was the first time the two have appeared together on the trail as Harris focuses her campaign on reproductive rights. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports.
In Kalamazoo, Obama said people were holding Harris and her opponent, former President Trump, to different standards. She also spoke at length directly to men about how further limits and restraints on access to women's health care would impact them and their sons, too.
So I am asking y'all from the core of my being to take our lives seriously. Please.
Her remarks echoed what Harris has been saying over the weekend as she tries to increase support from men who are favoring Trump over her. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News, Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Former President Trump was also in Pennsylvania holding a rally at Penn State University last night. NPR's Elena Moore was there.
Trump took the stage more than an hour and a half later than he was slated to, and just a day after he arrived nearly 3 hours late to a rally in Michigan. But while speaking to the crowd at Penn State, he made a direct appeal to younger Americans, a growing voting bloc that generally supports Democrats, but one that both candidates are courting.
For all the young people here at Penn State and across America who may be voting for the first time, I want you to know that I am in this fight for you. I didn't need this.
Pennsylvania is expected to be one of the most consequential states in the presidential election. Trump and Harris have visited there more than any other swing state since August. Elena Moore, NPR News, State College, Pennsylvania.
Trump is set to rally supporters this evening at New York City's Madison Square Garden on Tuesday. Kamala Harris is planning to deliver what her campaign calls her closing argument from the same spot in Washington, D.C., where Trump spoke just ahead of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has made his first comments on Israel's air attacks early Saturday, saying they should neither be downplayed nor exaggerated. Khamenei said Iranian officials should determine how to demonstrate Iran's power, as the BBC's Sebastian Usher reports.
Iran has been downplaying the extent of it, saying that there hadn't been major impact. It may give a sense that Iran is not preparing at the moment for any major, major response, but any response that would come from Iran, I think, would take quite a long time. We saw after the killing of the Hamas political leader Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran several months ago, Iran threatened very, very strong revenge against Israel then. It took a long time before that actually happened on October the 1st.
And you're listening to NPR News.
Emily Vincent, part of a clinical team at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Louisiana. It's October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Breast cancer is the most common cancer in American women, and it's the second leading cause of cancer deaths for women. The good news is there is great screening that can catch breast cancer early, when treatment is most likely to be successful. Start with breast self-awareness. You know your body better than anyone. If you notice something unusual or different, talk to your doctor. And begin having mammograms when your doctor recommends them. Usually that's around age 40, but it can be different for everyone, depending on your health history and risk factors. Talk to your doctor or gynecologist about breast cancer screening and what you should do. It could save your life.
Online radio at its best.
We need all of you, because right now, as you know, this race is close. It's too close for my liking. And I came out here to Michigan because I am someone who takes her own advice to heart. I know that if we want to help this country finally turn the page on the politics of hatred and division, we can't just sit around and complain. No, we've got to do something. If we want to usher in the next generation of American leadership, we have got to do something. If we want to elect someone with a character that is worthy of the Oval Office, someone with the strength of heart to guide our country to a better day, we have got to what? And that someone, of course, is my dear friend Kamala Harris.
Welcome back in 347-850-1272. That was First Lady, former First Lady Michelle Obama at a Harris Waltz rally in Kalamazoo, Michigan, really bringing down the house. And I'm fully convinced that the closer of the Democratic Party is not President Obama. It is Michelle Obama. If you saw this live, the reception that she received when she walked out on that stage, the way the crowd was in tune with her and vice versa, I'm here to tell you that she is the most popular Democrat in the country. Welcome back in. It's the Serious Side, 347-850-1272. Having some issues today. We have a few folks out. But my main man, my brother from another mother, Mr. Jerome Esprit, the smartest man in the world, is in the house. Let me bring him in. Good morning, Jerome. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing all right, man. Just trying to, you know, Fetter Millen trying to make it happen. All right, so listen.
I know
I'm not sure if you had an opportunity to see Michelle Obama out in the stump last night, but I think you and I both can agree that when it comes to popularity within the Democratic Party and nationwide, by the way, she's the only candidate out of all the people who have entered this presidential race, who's been a part of this process, she's the only candidate nationwide that's polling more popular than Donald Trump, or at least she was at some point. So, I mean, how important is it to have the former First Lady out there trying to bring the case home basically 2 weekends before the general election?
Well, you know, we always run into this, right, where I think I said this a long time ago, we're not going to have anybody on the stump like those two, right, like the former president and First Lady. Those
right.
guys are – you know, magnetic, the way their delivery, their, you know, just being authentic, that's not normal, right? And so you can't compare anybody to them. And that's why, you know, when you're talking about, you know, and before it used to be like Bill Clinton, people would say that about Bill Clinton. And
right.
then before that, people would say that about Jesse Jackson. And, you know, so people, there are some people who just do that very well, who can get up, entertain you a little bit, make you think, leave you with a catchphrase, make you feel like, you know, you're at a concert. And since, you know, everybody else kind of after that is kind of a letdown on the Republican equivalent is Trump, because Trump's not saying anything. He's just throwing out catchphrases, calling people names. Like he's doing not even the same thing. So they're not really comparable more than it
right.
is kind of one of those things that Michelle Obama has this gift, and it's tough. So the reason that our polling is like it is and all those things is because you don't see the big rallies that you see during Obama. You don't see all of that stuff going on and, you know, the frenzy things like people are happy to see you. Harris is a politician, and that's how it comes across, right? So when she's out or, you know, other candidates are out, it's politics. But with those guys, it's like the magnetism that they have is a little bit different. And I think it's unfair to compare them, but Michelle Obama is kind of special when it comes to that. Like, people relate to her very different. Now, I think President Obama has lost his luster in that because he's starting to say things that, you know, just like I think we talked about on one of the previous shows when he said something specific to black men, and black men don't want to hear that.
Right.
It wasn't that they didn't want to hear it, like he was, you know, telling them something they want to hear. He's not the king of black men. And so the way you talk to people, you know what I mean? Like, you can rally folks, but you can't do that kind of stuff. So I think he lost his luster. People respect him and respect his and kind of even admire the way he, you know, is dealing with everybody. But nobody is her. She doesn't go through bashing black women. You know what I mean? She won't say, hey, you know, something negative about black women and you need to step up and support her. She doesn't say that. She stays right on her path. And when she wants to speak directly to somebody, she just says what she says, and everybody can respect that.
But let me ask you something, because it's amazing that you brought up the fact that President Obama, has lost a little bit of shine because people, that's an excellent term that you use. He's not the king of all black men, but people like Spike Lee and there's some other, famous black folks who have said, hey, that was a message that African-American men need to hear. And if you kind of go back and listen to what he was saying, he wasn't saying basically the way I interpreted it when I saw it was, hey, look, brothers, we need you to step up and get the sisters back, because if we get into a bind, it's always our mamas, our sisters, our aunties, our meemaws, all those people come out and they always have our back. So this is an opportunity, or this is a special time in history for you to do the same. But what amazed me was how so many African-American men took that as, hey, don't you wave your finger at me. And I talked about this when we actually brought it up as a topic on one of the shows a few weeks earlier. Compared it to the pound cake speech that Bill Cosby gave to African Americans, and where African American folks are like, who the hell are you? You're not the king of black folks, that type of thing. So I think you had problems with the way he delivered that message as well, right?
Yeah, I'm a black man. That kind of works that way.
Well, I'm a black man too. The last time I looked in the mirror, sir. My goodness,
the irony,
Jerome.
The irony, as you're saying, is I'm actually eating pound cake for breakfast. So I'm like, are you watching me eat pound cake? So I know. While I'm talking, he has the pound cake reference while I'm eating pound cake. So the problem is that you're interpreting his speech for what it means to you, right?
Okay.
And that's fine. But the people who are having a problem with what he said, like me, is that you cannot berate anybody and then tell them to support someone.
But what did he do to berate? That's the part I'm trying. What did he do to berate African-American men, if I may ask?
Okay, well, what it is, okay, so we take criticism, like, very differently in the community, right? Like, so we're like, get up, support black women. Black men support black women. That's not a thing. So you are technically accusing us of something, like we're not stepping up. It wasn't asking people to step up. It was like, y'all need to step up because black women be taking care of you. Well, we have black mothers. What do you expect them not to take care of us? Will you expect black men not to take care of black women? Black men always look out for black women. That's not something that you need to berate people in public, and then you're saying that it wasn't like, you're doing a behind-the-closed-doors thing. There was some thing about us that we feel like, and even for Spike Lee to say that, we feel like we need to say this in public so that we understand what our responsibilities are. Black men do. And President Obama did not address black men when he was in office, just like Harris doesn't. And I'm not saying that they should. I'm just saying that they don't. So, you know, helping reform jails, for example, is not helping black men. Yes, there are black men in jail, but the issue is that that's not the totality. That's not the bigger picture of all black people. And some people kind of are pissed about that, to saying, what kind of agenda are you helping in, you know, pay equity or all these other things? And Obama's policy was all, what is that, something raises all boats or something. Like, you know, he wanted to say, if I help everybody across the board, black people would get help. That is not smart, and it helped him while he was running. If he wanted to do something for black people, he should have did something for black male image. He should have pardoned Mumia Abu-Jamal. He should have started pardoning those people who he knew were wrongfully accused and convicted as black folks. Symbolically, Marcus Garvey, when he went to Jamaica and Jamaica's president asked him to pardon him because they knew he was on trumped up charges when it actually happened. So he didn't do anything symbolic to say, listen, we demonize black men. I'm going to pardon Muhammad Ali, you know, or whomever who got arrested. I mean, he could have did some symbolic things to say, you know what, I'm a black man. We're going to correct some of these injustices. Did not do that, right? So you want us to blend into this melting pot without addressing black men directly, but you feel like it's your job to go back and say, oh, step up for her. We're going to step up for her anyway. Right? Wow. There's a big difference in that. So the tone in which you go, you know, the minister used to do that all the time. Like he would say, black man, get your butt up, go to your responsibility. I went to the Million Man March. It was not some kind of kumbaya moment that, you know, black men didn't hear speech after speech about addressing our responsibilities. That happened there. But no black man left there. Like, I can't believe y'all talking to us like that. We're not sensitive, but you can't do that in the biggest stage and then act like we're going to run and be like, you know what, you're right, we're going to go support her. We're going to support her anyway. Stop asking black men to kiss, you know, to lick the boots of false idols, because that's not what's happening. And I talk to a lot of people who feel that way. It's not me saying that. And like I said, I'm always very hesitant in giving my own personal opinion on that stuff because – it is an assessment of what's going on. If you want the bigger effect, like if you want the just a perspective, a bigger perspective, and understand how you're impacting people, those things don't work. And that was not helpful. Just like Bill Cosby's Final K-Seek wasn't helpful. But when it came down to it, the reason that when he went through the stuff that he went through, and people were like, where are the black men stepping up? We don't recall him stepping up for black men. We just remember him telling everybody, y'all no good, and you need to step up. Right? Like, we remember being berated by that guy.
Wow. That's interesting. 347-850-1272. That's an interesting take on it. Okay. Well, listen, that's people's opinions, and people are entitled to that because we live in America, not Russia. So now, what type of impact? I mean, are you, listen, this is what you do for a living. What type of impact, you know, do high price or high level surrogates have? You know, we had Beyonce the night before out stumping for the vice president. So what do you think, man? Do you think this is going to help the Harris campaign, or what's your thought process behind this?
Well, it helps to bring awareness because younger people don't pay attention to that process. So you are trying to speak to their audience and people who are, not really in the process. I don't like to use the word low information voter because, you know, I think that's just kind of overdone. But people who are not real on the cusp of voting or not voting, what day we got to vote, you know, am I registered? Like those folks. And so you bring pop culture in it a little bit. It does help and bring awareness, and it does kind of get your audience energetic. It's why you play music at rallies and you don't sit around and just read speeches all day. Like, you're trying to get everybody excited to do something. So sometimes entertainers help with that. But it doesn't, I don't think it does anything for the outcome. I think it's for when you're having big events and you have a lot of people there. It's like playing music at a venue. It doesn't matter if they're endorsing you or not. It does really does matter in in the excitement of people there. I'm not saying it takes all of our fans and makes them support you. I'm saying the people who are there to support you, it gives them a little bit more energy in being in a room. So it's good to do, but, you know, celebrity endorsements are just to bring attention. The media likes it. Entertainment covers it. Like, you know, you just won't be on the political page. You'll be on the entertainment page. So it helps with the marketing of candidates to have entertainers there.
Well, listen, I think without a shadow of a doubt that Michelle Obama is the most popular Democrat that's walking the face of this planet. When I tell you that I was flabbergasted by the reception that she received in Kalamazoo,
really?
Michigan. Yes, I was.
Really?
I mean, I did not expect, you know, because, listen, it kind of reminded me of the reception she received. Like, I remember when her first book, is it called Becoming, when it first came out, and she started doing the late night circuit to promote her book, and people were like, oh my God, you know, here's someone from the former administration. This is our former first lady. She's only been maybe like less than a year removed. We really miss you. And every time she would go on a show, like, for example, when she appeared, I think it was at the Grammys, when she was on the stage with all those other beautiful and talented artists, and she got the most applause. I mean, I think Alicia Keys was up there. I can't remember everyone that was on stage, but I just remember how people were like, oh my God, there she is. Please come back and save us. And I would think after 4 years or after 8 years of not being in the White House, I just was shocked. I was shocked at the reception that she received. I'm just being honest with you.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that you're shocked because, I mean, the whirlwind of the Obamas in the White House had an impact worldwide.
Yes.
If we started posting pictures of, you know, President Obama when he went to Cuba and when he went to all these other places that we're like, oh, you know, they don't like Americans, you see the reception that he got around the world, it should not be shocking because that didn't just happen here. That impact happened across the planet, and they're very charismatic. They're very charismatic. And so for Michelle has always given, like, now, okay, so here's what I would say stereotypical black folk is. Michelle has always given the impression of, like, your favorite fun aunt who will discipline your butt if you step out of line for black people. Black people love her. Right?
Yeah.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
They will laugh with you, teach you how to ride a bike, and when you come home and you got a bad grade, they're like, sit there, you ain't getting no cake. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? She,
well, how is that any
is,
different, though, than what President Obama, I mean, because, you know, she was like, hey, y'all need to get out there and make this happen. But I think you're right. I think her approach, it feels different. You're right about that.
I have a really quick one on this one. So, mm-hmm. I remember, this is quite a few years ago, but a friend of mine that I grew up with, I remember going to visit, and I'm at their house, and there were some young kids, probably, I don't know, 16, 17, 18, right?
Okay.
Young
okay.
black males walking down the street with their pants kind of sagging, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my friend, me and her brother, well, they're all my friends, but so her brother and I was just kind of standing on the porch, and she comes off her porch, and she said, hey, young men, that is not cute. Can you pull up your pants? And they looked at her, and they pulled their pants up and kept walking. Whereas as a guy, if I would have said, hey, y'all need to pull your pants up, we would have fought. Right? There's a difference when men, like, and again, and it's a very simple thing that all men understand, even little boys. when men are talking to each other, there's always a slight threat of violence in that conversation.
That's
right?
True.
It can go off the rails. But when women do that, right, it wasn't like we thought we weren't worried about her safety. We were actually there for her, right? Nothing was going to happen to her, and those young men were going to respect her. Women can say things to men that other men can't say to other men because they know that that's love. That's somebody caring about you.
Right,
she,
right,
you know,
right.
And she kind of did it. Yeah, the way she addressed it, she was like, yeah, I look so much better, and that looks nice. And they dressed it, and they just did it. So Michelle can do that very different than him because he's just asking to fight someone.
Right, right.
No,
I,
you better.
That's an excellent. I like the way you broke that down. You're right about that because, you know, it's if it's a male, it's a male-on-male type of confrontation. Like, you know, what are you doing? You can't talk to me like that. But if it's a female, it's like, okay, she's coming at you like your mama. Yeah, I hear you like that. Yeah, that makes sense, man.
There's a, and so we kind of discount this in black folks that think that we still don't do that. And I don't care how bad the neighborhood is. It is always women that can get through and say, hey, you know what? You look better with a haircut, right? Like you can make men do things. And I shouldn't say make because it's not a bullying issue. It's that we all want to be seen in a good light amongst people who love us.
I agree.
So we discount that. We keep thinking, oh, you know, black folks need to hear this. We need to hear this. And it's like we've heard that nonsense since whoever, since the 30s. Mm-hmm. You know, there are always elements in every community that you know, falls off the wagon kind of thing. And we're the only community that actually treats it like we're the only ones that do that or that there's an abomination and only black people have exclusive rights to you know, not vote or something like that. Like, we are the only people who jump on ourselves about negative all day long, opposed to saying, how do we get there? So a better approach would have been like, you know, instead of feeling like he need to give somebody tough love, because that's not what that is, right? You're still asking them to fight, you know, asking someone to fight you. When I address, and I still do that because I speak in different areas, but if I'm talking to a bunch of young men, I talk to them. I don't talk at them. And I have gotten that over the years where, you know, a former NFL player said this to me. I mean, he won the Super Bowl, and we were speaking at some event, and he goes, how come people listen to you when you speak, but all of us are going back and forth debating, you know, like trying to over-talk each other? And I literally told him it's because I don't care, right, to make everybody feel good. They're listening because you're still telling them something that is for their own benefit. So if I tell you something like, hey, you know what, cross the street when the light's green. If it's red, you might get hit by a car. If I say that to you, you're just knowing the rules of the game, right, which is going to help you, opposed to me saying, hey, if you just study, you'll get better at whatever. That's not a anything directly to apply to anything. You have to give men instruction, right, when they're talking, when you're answering their question, you give instruction, but you do not go back and just tell them they're bad people and you need to be better. That sounds kind of silly.
Interesting. So listen, you know, I tell you what, she said something during her remarks that kind of caught my attention, and I think probably most Democrats feel this way, and even Democrat-leaning independents. And Michelle Obama said, look, this thing is a little too close for comfort for me. You know, it's a little too close for comfort for me. And I think a lot of people feel the same way. It's crazy.
Yeah, but
it really and truly
how
is.
How do you not love her for that? She didn't say,
right,
this is too close for comfort for Harris. This is too close for comfort for Democrats. She said, for me, right?
Yeah.
And so everything is personally coming through her, and people can see her authenticity. She's like, I am worried. I don't care what they tell you on the polls. This is too close for comfort for me. We need to do, you know. And so people take that stuff very differently when you inject yourself into something. She's not telling you to do something. She's asking you to do something so that we all have something better. Like, she's asking. She's not saying, get up off your butt and do something. She didn't say that.
Right.
So the delivery is important.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. 347-850-1272. Now, I want to take a few minutes here to bring in someone that's been a part of our family on this network from the early days. I mean, for folks who have been listening to us in some form or fashion on one of our different platforms, we've had so many shows on this thing. We've had, Power Hour Sports Talk Radio. We've had, the True Purpose Development Show with Princess Adelia. We had Ladies First with Montula Donnas. We've had, Adam, Where Art Thou? With Kathleen Williams. Serious Side of J. Ryle Show. We've had so many different shows. We used to be affiliated with the J. King Network, where we would simulcast on their network. But we've had a lot of folks come through here. I mean, there are a lot of names of people who have been associated with this network over the years. And, some of those people have kind of fallen off. We don't really keep in contact with them anymore. But then there are some who, even though we may not stay in contact as much as we used to, they're still like family. And they're still family. It's not like they are still family. And so I wanted to one of our family members is dealing with something that and if you've been listening to this network for a long time, you're going to recognize him as soon as I bring him in. And I wanted to give him some time because, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And even though, women, we primarily focus on women when we talk about breast cancer, but men can develop breast cancer as well. Our cancer in general, cancer is horrible. And no matter, some of us, I'm pretty sure everyone within the sound of my voice has either been affected by it, know someone that's been affected by it in the whole nine yards. So this morning I want to bring in one of my dear, dear, dear friends, a guy that has been, he's been a staple on this network for a very, very, very long time. Let me bring him in. I'll give him a few minutes to talk about what's going on in his world. And without any further ado, let me bring in Big Earn. Big Earn, man, what's going on? Welcome into the Serious Side. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I thought I had breast cancer there for a minute. I didn't know where you were going with that.
Yeah, well, kind of ride with it, man. You know me.
Yeah, I'm riding with it.
Well, listen, man. I we kind of talked. We talked last week. And I wanted to, give you, we didn't know this was up in the air because of what you and I talked about and some of the things that you're dealing with. We didn't know if you were going to be able to come on this morning, but apparently you're here. So I want to give you this whole segment, the rest of this segment, man, to kind of talk to us a little bit about what's going on with you. And let me just be quiet, man, and just turn the mic over to you.
Well, that's the first. Everybody make a note of that. Jay's going to be quiet for a minute. Jay, so you and I talked last week after I think Miss Terry had contacted you.
Yes.
And Miss Terry and I are just like best friends. We check on each other every day and we FaceTime a few times a week and everything. So so earlier this year, I felt something kind of growing under my in the right side of my neck, under my ear and just above my collar line. And by the 1st of June, I had this, like, thing on my neck, and it burst, and it never healed up. So by the 1st of July, we went to the ER, and everybody's kind of assuming it was an infection because the side of my face, I got a CT scan in the ER, and you could tell that there was fluid in it. And it kind of worked its way down into my right armpit a little bit. I didn't really feel that necessarily. And then by the 1st of August, I had been to the VA because I'm a veteran, and I was in ear, nose, and throat, and the doctor's like, well, that doesn't really look like cancer to me, and it's probably just some infection. Let's figure it out. And by the 1st of August, they had admitted me to the hospital for about 4 days, and pumped me full of antibiotics. That wasn't working, so the infectious disease doctor took me off that. And we're going to do a biopsy because there were some hard areas right under my jawline on the right side. My whole face was lopsided. And so we did eventually did a biopsy. It came back, this was like August 7th or so, because I was in from like the 2nd to the 6th or something like that in the hospital. So I was discharged, came back the next morning for a biopsy, and got the results a day later, and it was Hodgkin's lymphoma. And talk about freaking out after I hung up the phone. I didn't know anything about Hodgkin's lymphoma. I know that there's a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I don't know the difference. I still don't know the difference between the two. So I had to talk to an oncologist, this doctor named Dr. Saloti. She is just wonderful. And she said, Mr. Sewell, she said, this is a curative disease. She said Hodgkin's lymphoma is very receptive to treatment, and it's very curable. And I said, well, okay, that feels like a positive note. And she said, you know, we need to do a few things before we get you into chemotherapy. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be doing chemotherapy. What is my life all of a sudden? You know, I mean, a few months before, the only thing I took was ibuprofen, and now I'm starting to get high blood pressure medication. And she starts putting me on a few other pills preemptively, just simple things, but enough that now I'm a man with a pill box, AM and PM, Monday, there's Sunday through Saturday. I get eventually get a heart test, a lung test, a lot of breathing on the pulmonary test. I get a PET scan, which is similar to a CT scan. It really tells you where the cancer is in your body. I mean, and when I saw the scan a few days later, it just lit up. It's black, and then you see this bright gold yellow where the cancer is. And the whole right side of my face, my shoulder mark, it just lit up on that thing. And it was like, wow, that's going to be a lot to tackle. And so I eventually am scheduled for a port implant in my chest, right above, it's on the left side, right above your pectoral, just below your collarbone. It's about the size of, remember those Rolo candies when we were kids? You can roll a Rolo to your pal. Those little chocolate candy. That's about what size the port is. And I was wide awake during the thing. There wasn't even an anesthesiologist in the room. They just give you local anesthetic and they give you some pain reliever. I didn't know I was pumped full of fentanyl until it was over. That was scary. Like, you put fentanyl in me? But they did. And they implant that port, do a little stitch. I didn't feel a thing. And even the, later that night when the drugs wore off, it was just slightly tender. It was crazy. And it's a little silicone thing. So when I get chemotherapy now, and I've already started chemo, it's a tiny little needle that goes into it with a little fish hook on the end. And you can really barely feel it go through your skin. And it goes into that port, and the port itself actually has, that runs from there up to my jugular and then back down into my system. So you can get blood from it. You know, if they take blood, they take blood before every chemo session just to know where your levels are with everything. And that's where they feed the chemo into me. So they don't have to always find a vein. You know, I got a port. And otherwise you don't notice. It's just a little bump on your chest. It's pretty insignificant. So I've been to two chemo treatments. My last two treatments, I should have had four by now. They were canceled because through an abundance of caution, there was a tiny little pimple, kind of like a hair bump, superficial pimple right on that stitch line where the port is. And a little bit of pus came out. And I'm talking literally like a little hair bump. But they consider that to be a possible infection, not like sepsis or anything, but they don't want to push that back into my system by poking it with a needle. So they put me on some antibiotics, and I said, is this going to affect the cancer? And my doctor said, no. She said, you know, when we started this, I told you there was going to be, you know, bumps along the way, and this is just one of them. We've seen it before. And when we get past to make sure that there's not an infection, because my last blood work showed my white blood cells a little bit elevated, which can kind of indicate an infection. Your white blood cells go up when you're fighting infection. Those are like your frontline warriors in your blood. once I get through the antibiotics, and actually the wound is, my little stitch line is really healing up nicely. So I think those antibiotics are helping whatever's going on with the healing. I'm supposed to go back this Thursday, which would normally be an off week for chemo, just to get it checked. My chemo is every other Thursday, so last week would have been one, and next week would have been one. But I'm going back in the in-between to make sure that I'm okay. So I don't know if they're going to reschedule it or just keep me on the same schedule. The chemo is harsh. I don't feel it right away. I actually feel it about 3 or 4 days later. That's why I'm okay to call today, because I didn't have chemo this past Thursday.
Okay.
I don't have nausea. I tell you what, Jay, I have the best team. They take care of me, my infusion nurse, the nurse navigator for oncology, and my doctor. They're all women. I was raised by women, so I feel comfortable in that. There's other doctors around that come and check on me. The other thing is that wound on my neck, I should tell you, turned into something huge. It was like my head, I can't exaggerate this, Jay. It felt like my head was getting ready to come off my neck. This wound was about 5 or 6 inches long. It just kept eating away at my skin. It hurt. It drained. I had to keep it bandaged all the time. I can't go anywhere because all of this taking me over was zapping my energy. I had no stamina, no energy to do anything. I had brain fog all the time. And so now through chemo, this wound is just about gone at this point. The chemo has worked wonders even after just 2 treatments. But it got the attention. When you get a biopsy for something like what I have, like Hodgkin's lymphoma, they'll send out that test to a set of blind eyes and have it retested just to see if somebody else gets the same result, you know, like a blind test. And they happen to send it to Walter Reed Medical in Washington, D.C., just as, you know, whatever is random. Well, when those people found out, first of all, they came up with the same thing. It's Hodgkin. When they found out it manifested on the skin, they said, we need to see more of this, because only up to 7% of cases of Hodgkin's lymphoma actually present on the skin. Super rare. And I thought, I'm really not this extra in my real life. But and so they had me sign a release form so they could take pictures and be able to show it to other fellowships or conferences of doctors and study it more and look at it. So I had a doctor come in the day of my first chemo. She said, do you mind if I get – and I knew her from my being time in the VA. She said, do you mind if I get pictures of your wound for this Walter Reed thing? And I said, well, today's the day to do it, because once the chemo starts, this is going to start to heal, you know, from the bottom side up. It'll never look this worse again. I can't even look at those pictures now. It's so gruesome. I can't even describe how gruesome it is. It's like a snake bite meets a spider bite. It was a carotid scan. It didn't stink or anything. It was just really, really harsh and hurtful. And so now, you know, I guess I'm a celebrity or Walter Reed. My name's not attached to it, but my file is. So right now I feel fine because I've been off chemo for a few weeks, but I think I'll probably be back on it this week or next week. I don't have any nausea that protects me from that. I get fatigue. It's like, I tell people, it's like being a zombie and you're hit by a truck. And I just had to give in to, if I get up at 9 o'clock, let's say, and by noon I need a nap, I'm just going to go lay down and take a nap. I can't. My doctor said, Mr. Sewell, nobody gets a gold star for toughing your way through this. If you have a problem or you need to do something, you call us. If you need to take a nap, you take a nap. If you need to do something, just do it. Nobody gets a gold star for being a hero here. And I thought, you know what? I need to give myself permission to just be in that moment and feel the way I feel and deal with it. You know, if it's taking a nap or just not doing anything in that moment. You know, we're always programmed. You got to be doing something or you're lazy. I have Hodgkin's. Calm down. I'm going to take a nap or two, you know.
Let me ask you something, man, because I think, no, you're fine. Because I think that, you know, one of the reasons why, first of all, you know, your family, you're going to always be able to come here and have conversations with us. So that's, I don't give a damn. That's just the way that is. But let me ask you, man, because now you're sharing this publicly. And so, is this a relief for you? I mean, how does this feel, man? Because sometimes when people have these personal battles, they keep them, you know, they keep it in the closet, and they find themselves, you know, stressing out. Was it better? Is it better now that you're letting people know that this is what's going on, hoping that maybe this will reach someone who may be experiencing some of the symptoms that you experienced? Maybe it's helping someone. I guess the question is, why did you want to go public with this? Why? Because we had this conversation, and we could have just left it there. Why did you want to come on this show and put this personal information out about yourself?
Well, I actually kept it a secret for a long time. On Facebook, you can create a filter to where, you know, it only reaches a certain audience. And so I had family members and 3 or 4 close friends. I think I had 12 people total that when I was going through things, I was doing health updates, but only they could see them. So nobody else knew. Once I started chemotherapy, I kind of took a picture, it's even on my Instagram, not that far back, actually, of me sitting in a chair with the port in my chest, and, you know, here's the first day of it. And I thought, I'm not going to keep it a secret forever. I didn't want people to be upset with me because I kept something life-changing from them, you know, people that I considered friends or whatever.
Right.
And I just, you know, we were in radio. I was in radio. We talk about things. We're verbose. We go on about stuff on air, talk about stuff. So it was bound. I was bound to say something to everybody eventually. Miss Perry knew. I kept her in the loop early on. She was on that filter, and I haven't talked. I think I've talked to one other person that's had Hodgkin's, and the chemotherapy was okay for them, but I think they ended up doing immunotherapy, which I'm not totally sure what that is, and I'm not at that point yet. I'm not even at the point that anybody's talking about radiation yet either.
Okay.
So it's actually freeing to not carry a secret like that.
Right.
So you and I are kind of the generation where, you know, we're Gen X, so we're kind of the generation where you just kind of toughed it out. You know, we didn't have a lot of sympathy from people. We had our friends, but when we faced something, whether it was a sickness or, you know, a hardship in our life or whatever, we just kind of dug in and did it the best we could. We had some friends that would help us a little bit, but we just kind of handled it. And that's always been my mental programming, good or bad.
Yeah.
And so to come out with it publicly, I have learned, I think I didn't realize this, I learned how many people actually gave a crap about me. And I don't say that egotistically, but I always kind of had the view that it's like, oh, you know, I'm there and people just kind of tolerate me and keep me at arm's length. I just always had that impression. And all of a sudden people are showing up with, you know, they're sending me cards, or I've had my friends who I've known since first grade or high school fly from Oklahoma to New York just to stay with us for 3 or 4 days and give my best friend that I live with a little bit of a caretaker break. You know, and people come, like, do you need anything? Do you need me to, you know, run to the store for you? And people will bring food and just little things. And I'm like, it's humbling to realize how much people care about you. So I'm kind of glad that I went public with it, because you really learn who your friends are.
Right.
Those people that come up to you and say, oh, you got this. I'm like, that's just so dismissive. Like, you got this. You don't need me.
Right.
And I never hear from them again. And some people that are even nurses that are my friends haven't heard from them at all.
Yeah.
I'm like, I thought the nurses would be digging in, wanting to know some stuff, you know.
What's going on with
you? You learn who your friends are, and you learn who you are as a you know, you have to, you get humbled real quick.
Right, right.
You get to hear and cry sometimes.
No, that's right.
Friends that I have.
And I was going to ask you that about, you know, there are those emotional roller coasters that's associated with this. I mean, you damn near have to be, you know, a zombie not to experience the highs and lows of going through this. So, you know, because obviously you've been in radio, so you know we're going to have to wrap it up. So yeah. Two quick questions for you. you know, give us a little bit of give us some insight on the roller coaster of the emotions, and then kind of let us know what's happening with you moving forward.
Okay, so the roller coaster is, you know, we're taught men don't cry. And frankly, I think men crying is a superpower because it really means you're in touch with a side of yourself that's vulnerable. And you don't have to man up, and you can man up and still cry. And I've always been a crier. My dad used to tease me when I was a kid. A little boy, because I would cry, and he's like, I'm going to put flower curtains in your room. And, you know, when you're seven, that just seems like an assault. You know, flowers in my room, you know. But I was always a crier.
Yeah.
And you get those moments where I'm sitting here, and, I make quilts. I'm a quilter. I started during COVID. I sell quilts on Etsy. I think they look really great. I've sold some quilts. There's more up there. I haven't been able to sew because it's zapped my energy. So that kind of takes away from something I enjoy doing. So sometimes I'm just sitting here and I will just break down crying. And I realized something when my mother died back in 2012. I think we were all on the air together back then. When my mother died, I learned, and my friend from school, her mother died shortly after. And she called me. She said, Ernest, I don't know how to deal with my mother dying. And I said, well, what I've learned is whatever you feel in the moment, you have to let yourself feel it.
Right.
Because your body and your mind is trying to work that out. So if you feel happy, you know, your mom just died. But if you feel happy or like you're giggly or something, then just enjoy that. If you feel like crying, then cry it out. And so that's – I've always taken that with me. And so that's what it is now. There's times when I will sit here, we can be watching the news or Wheel of Fortune, and I'll just break down in tears. Mm-hmm. And my roommate's like, what's wrong? And I said, I'm just having a moment. And I'll cry it out for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, and then 5 minutes later, we're making fat jokes. You know, it's whatever.
So that's
the roller coaster of it, that it just happens. I can't watch cat videos on YouTube anymore, Jay. They make me cry. Like those adoption videos, like this cat was down on the street. That is so terrible.
Oh, my God. So yeah, you want to listen. It's just not you. Well, it's just not you. But go moving forward. What's happening with you moving forward?
Yeah, moving forward, so we get back on chemo. So a cycle of chemo is 2 treatments, which means, and they're 2 weeks apart. I have to do 6 cycles, so ultimately that means 12 chemo treatments every other week, which is now I've done two and I've skipped two. So this is really going to put me through April that I'm going to be going through chemotherapy. And then at the end of it, they will do one of those PET scans again and see what it got and what it didn't, and then we'll make a decision. If it got it all, then maybe I'm considered in remission or whatever they call it. If there's still something there, I don't know if they're going to choose to do radiation, do a couple more cycles of chemo. My doctor has at least been at the VA for 16 years, and she's brilliant. She just rattles off medication names like it's her children's names, and I fully trust her. So I don't have that much to look forward to other than getting through chemo every other week. And I just want to say this before you wrap it up. If you know somebody that's ill, whether it's cancer or something like that, and you want to help them, don't ask them, what can I do for you? Because they got enough to worry about. Be proactive and think, what do they need? Do they live alone? So if they live alone, maybe they need somebody to come over and help clean their house, run the vacuum, run a dust cloth over stuff, you know, empty their dishwasher, clean up their kitchen, clean the bathroom. They're going to the bathroom. Just get in there, humble yourself, and clean the bathroom for them. Do they need food? Are they able to prepare food easily for themselves? Maybe you can make some things, buy some pre-made stuff that's relatively healthy, put it in their fridge or freezer for them. So you can even order meal services like HelloFresh or something like that for them. And maybe go over and cook some meals for them with that if they can't do it. So be proactive, because they've got their own list to worry about with medications and appointments. Be proactive and think, what would I need if I were in that situation? And then touch base with that person and do that for them. That's how you can help somebody else, you know, that's close by that you're in touch with, if they're ill or something like that. So, and just be there for them. Sometimes people just need a friend around to listen to. Maybe they're crying. Maybe you just need to sit with them, just be in the room with them. You know, ask them, is that okay? If it's not, they'll tell you. And if it is, they'll tell you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Ernest, listen, man, you know, brother, how I feel about you. You're always to be a member of this family. And please, man, keep us up to speed. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of listeners out there who have been listening to us for a very long time and recognize the voice. But, man, come back. Let us know how you're doing. I'll be checking with you on a personal level. But now you brought us in, man. You got to keep us abreast of what's happening. And, hey, man, we appreciate you. We love you.
Yeah, this is my doctor told me we're taking a curative approach. So I really haven't thought about it ending badly. I'm just waiting to get to the other side.
Absolutely.
Where we're going to be done with it, because it really is a highly successful treatment plan. She told me she was going to push me to my limits. It is a very aggressive treatment. I'm getting 4 medications within 2 hours during chemotherapy. It's a lot to take in. And but Hodgkin's is really receptive to that, because it's a lymph node cancer. It's not a blood cancer. So it just, it's different in whatever way it is. And I'm like, well, let's get to April. Let's work it a week at a time. Let's get to April and see where we're at. So that's, you know, I don't think I'm going anywhere other than I'm shooting for 57 in March. And by April, I hope we wrap this up and I can continue getting back to my life.
All right, man. Well, listen, man, appreciate you checking in with us, and Godspeed, brother, and we look forward to hearing from you soon. We know you're going to come out on this even better on the other side. 347-850-1272. We'll be right back after this. Don't you go anywhere.
There's a massive rally in Georgia this week for Vice President Kamala Harris. Speaking to more than 20,000 people, she had a message for the young progressive wing of the party.
I've seen what you do, and I see how you are doing it, because you are rightly impatient for change.
Democrats just barely won Georgia 4 years ago, thanks in part to organizing on the left. And as NPR White House correspondent Ozma Khalid reports from Atlanta, they're hoping for a repeat.
Hey guys. How are y'all being?
The other day, I met up with a group of organizers and progressive activists at Manuel's Tavern. It's a political hotspot that's been visited by a lot of Democratic politicians over the years. I first met these folks back in May, and at that point, they were really uneasy about Joe Biden's re-election bid. So much has changed since then, so I wanted to hear how they're feeling about the election now.
With Harris as the candidate that we get to choose from now, it does feel a little bit easier.
That's Adrian Consinger. In the spring, he told me he did not feel comfortable voting for Biden, mainly because of Gaza. He's still upset by the images he sees on social media, but he feels more optimistic for change with Harris.
I wanted the Democratic Party to earn my vote.
Do you think they've done that?
At this current juncture, they're doing a way better job than what they were.
So all of you all agree it was better. It was better for the Democratic Party to replace the top of the ticket.
No-brainer.
Some say they feel like Harris might be more willing to listen to different, younger perspectives. But they're also wary about her overtures to Republicans and her tough talk on the border, plus her continued unconditional support for Israel as it wages war in Gaza and now Lebanon. Wani Shin says in her view, Harris is better than Biden, but still she feels lukewarm about her.
It's not like I'm so gung-ho and I don't even have a sign in front of the house because I just don't want to. I'm not super excited, but it's better than Trump.
Shin works with the Asian American community. She says this cycle, she can't get herself to go door knocking for Harris.
If I'm having a hard time, how can I convince others to do so? It just seems very disingenuous.
What is striking is that everybody here, despite their previous reservations, they've all come home to the Democratic Party. They're worried about a second Donald Trump presidency. Here's Marissa Pyle's calculation.
The reality is one of these two people is going to be president, and I would like the one that is not going to do fascism.
Harris is campaigning hard on warnings from former Trump advisors that the Republican nominee is a danger to democracy. Pyle says she had a really hard time voting for Harris, but ultimately she sees her vote as, quote, harm mitigation.
There wasn't really anything she said that did it for me. It's the threat to everyone else. And I, as a white person, have a lot of privilege in society, and I don't feel like it is right for me to decide to stand back and allow other people to get hurt.
Sitting next to her, Brian Ramirez says he doesn't love how the vice president talks about immigration. He used to be undocumented.
When she speaks on the border, she speaks a lot on drugs, crime, that kind of thing, when it's much more than that.
He's also put off by Harris's efforts to persuade Republican moderates.
It just hurts when she says, oh, I'll have Republicans in my cabinet, or she's campaigning with Liz Cheney.
Harris has been visiting suburban communities with the former congresswoman, a Republican. Despite his qualms, Ramirez, who works with the Georgia Youth Justice Coalition, is still voting for Harris and canvassing for her. Sitting with us was Reverend Gerald Durden. He's a well-known civil rights leader around here.
This is what I say to young people. This is the T-shirt I wear. And all over where I speak, if I can, you can.
Those are the words on the black T-shirt he's got on. He got it custom made.
If I can vote for 65 years, you can vote for 15 more days. If I can stay in the movement for 65 years, you can make... I said, if I can, you can. If I can, you can.
It's a message he's delivering across the state, trying to convince voters to show up for Harris, making the point the change takes time. Asma Khalid, NPR News, Atlanta.
Online radio at its best.
What are your feelings, and let me start with the women here, about Kamala Harris?
She's a woman of color. I'm not putting her down because of that, and I'm not putting her down because she's a woman. I'm not a feminist, so I'm sorry. But at the end of the day, I don't think that she has the personality. I don't think that she has what it takes to go up against Putin and go up against these other presidents that are built for this. I don't want to be scared because my president is scared. I want my president to feel secure and manly and about it.
As a woman, most men, they respect a woman, but she just don't have the qualification or the education to really run America because she don't have the experience. She don't understand our struggles. And for me to believe you for another 4 years, you're crazy. Like, you're crazy. You're saying the same thing that you said 4 years ago.
Well, for me, the very first time I ever heard the name Kamala Harris, it was in association to locking up parents for a truancy. That was the first time I ever heard of her name. And I really didn't understand how this person claims to be a black woman, but yet she's locking up black women and black men and separating families. When she sworn to the Senate, it was as the first Indian American.
Thank you.
Which is fine. We don't care. We all know she's not black. Let's understand that. We are all clear of that.
It's 8 minutes after the top of the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TJRS radio network. And what you just heard was you heard from a number of African-American women who have said that they're not voting for Kamala Harris. And you heard some of the reasons right there why they're not going to vote for her. So you heard things like she's not educated enough. You heard things like, oh, she can't stand up to Putin. These are the things that you heard come from the lips of people that, and I'm just going to assume this, I could be wrong, most of our listening audience probably looks like us. If you don't know what we look like, go pull up some of our show pages. There are photographs of us. I find it amazing that black people can support this person. I find it amazing that there are African Americans who would actually say that she's not educated enough. And Donald Trump is? In 9 days, we are having an election that could change our life forever. The next president will more than likely have the ability to assign 2 more Supreme Court justices. You people, wake the F up. What the hell is wrong with y'all? If you are black and you're considering voting for this man, turn your damn black card in. Because I am tired of this nonsense. This is ridiculous. Oh, she said she was Indian, blah, blah. I don't give a damn if she said she was Puerto Rican. She looked closer to your color than damn freaking Donald Trump. Jerome, man, come on, bro. Take it, because I'm having a seizure over here. I'm about to blow my effing top because I cannot believe what I hear from people that look like us. How do you think Donald Trump is the solution to our problems? Where he sits here and stereotypes you dumb bastards by selling you gold tennis shoes. Oh, black folks like gold stuff. I don't give a damn if you think, I know President Obama scolded y'all, but you ain't getting it like you're going to get it from me this morning, and I don't give a damn. You don't have to like me. You don't have to listen to this radio show. I could care less. But he is stereotyping you fools. He's giving you gold chains because black people like shiny stuff. Yeah. Hey, y'all can relate to y'all because I was in jail too. We got something in common. We have mug shots. You idiots! Wake up! Bro, take it, man, because I'm glad Miss Elias is not here today, because I Miss Elias is not here. I don't go check comments. So I'm not checking any comments. Right. You can say what you want to say. I'm not reading them today. Go ahead, Jerome, it's on you, bro.
That's what you want,
Mr. LAX,
here today.
Oh, damn. Well, I'm still not checking him. What's up, brother? I'm still not checking him.
Yeah, he didn't want to go to the internet comments. All right, so, you know, I was, this is something we talked about a long time ago. When you asked me about what kind of strategy would I go about, running her campaign opposed to anyone else's, it's because you're going to get that anyway. There are black folks who watch Fox News. There are black conservative, crazy folks. And I used to say all the time, Fox News is not news. So some of those things that they even mention about her, that came from Fox News. Right? They didn't sit back and be like, she's not, and say things like, oh, she's not qualified or she's not black. That didn't come from black folks. So they got that from watching other people say that, right? So what happens is if you keep repeating something, it becomes a part of the psyche of those people who are half listening. And so when people say stuff like that, we know that, blackness is more than the color sometimes, right? And it's not that, people can look at her and be like, oh, she's not black. There is no way that anybody would have came across that naturally. So those are people who are influenced by the media machine that is trying to normalize that fool, what I mean by dotard. They're normalizing him, and then they're making it seem like she's not qualified to do anything. First of all, she's a senator. She is vice president. That's the closest that anybody can ever be to be president. So where are you going to pick from? If that's not your criteria, being vice president and being a senator, you don't know how to work the legislature. You don't know how the executive branch works. Well, she knows how both of them work. So it's never going to be that's not an issue. It is a talking point. So anytime I see this, it was something that I knew they were going to have to combat. And even though, we would get internet comments saying, whatever they would say about me in my assessment in this is a part of why you get really careful on walking around with Liz Cheney. She should have did that earlier. She shouldn't do it later when just as it's coming up to the race. In the last 2 weeks, you don't do that. She could have sent the vice president out with Liz Cheney, but she can't do it. At the top of your ticket, you need to rally your own base. Democrats always think, okay, I'm done with getting my people. Let's go try to get them over here. It's always been a mistake. So that's a talking point now because that was a mistake. You don't do that. So they're making a lot of mistakes, but at the same time, there is nobody with any good sense that should vote for Dotard, right? So they need to change the focus off of her and stop overanalyzing. And women do that a lot. You know, I can tell you just from, you know, doing women races that the most critical people about women running are other women. So you always have to kind of figure this out as you're going. But it's really not men. It is actually women who assess. I've had candidates where they would knock doors and an old couple would come out and they both would be saying things like, how many kids you have and who's going to take care of your kids? And I mean, they still go off on that stuff in rural areas. So that's not new. Like, that argument is not new. So anyway, yeah, that I wouldn't put a lot of value in that because that is, we have a certain amount of people who are brainwashed. We have a certain amount of people who can't see the forest for the trees. They don't know that they're voting against their own interests, but we shouldn't promote them like that's the majority of us.
Well, that's well said. That's well said. And, you know, and I thought about that when we, in this week's edition of 4 Minutes or Less, Something That You Need to Know, talking about how some of the progressives have, you know, and I thought that's the first thing I thought of when that segment was playing. You were talking about how, you know, you mentioned this before that, you know, maybe she should not have been standing shoulder to shoulder with Liz Cheney just at this stage, you know, go after your base and try to get them to come out. But you know, you're kind of calm, and listen, I'll give you that. But Mr. Elias, listen, man, first of all, welcome in. Appreciate you being here, dog. I want to play, I want you to listen to this again, Mr. Elias, because, see, I'm so glad you showed up because you're the first person I thought of when we heard this. So let me play this again, Mr. Elias, and then, you know, then I want to get your comments behind it. Just listen, because I think I could get you there. I think I could get you there. Listen.
What are your feelings, and let me start with the women here, about Kamala Harris?
She's a woman of color. I'm not putting her down because of that, and I'm not putting her down because she's a woman. I'm not a feminist, so I'm sorry. But at the end of the day, I don't think that she has the personality. I don't think that she has what it takes to go up against Putin and go up against these other presidents that are built for this. I don't want to be scared because my president is scared. I want my president to feel secure and manly and about it.
As a woman, most men, they respect a woman, but she just don't have the qualification or the education to really run America because she don't have the experience. She don't understand our struggles. And for me to believe you for another 4 years, you're crazy.
Right.
Like, you're crazy. You're saying the same thing that you said 4 years ago.
Well, for me, the very first time I ever heard the name Kamala Harris, it was in association to locking up parents for a truancy. Mm-hmm. That was the first time I ever heard of her name. And I really didn't understand how this person claims to be a black woman, but yet she's locking up black women and black men and separating families. When she sworn to the Senate, it was as the first Indian American.
Thank you.
Which is, it's fine. We don't care. Yeah.
We all know she's not black. Let's understand that. We are all clear of that.
Oh, my God. Mr. Elias, bro, listen, I'm just going to let you have it, man.
Well, all I can say is the first guy, he probably needs a
they were all females.
Man himself. Oh, that
females.
Was a female?
They were all
oh,
females.
Wow. Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, hey, she, for her to sit there and say that she couldn't stand up to Putin, Trump didn't stand up to Putin. Hell, he bent over and took it right up the wazoo to Putin. Told her, said he believed that Putin over his own staff. So what are you talking about? Then there's tapes over that when they said, who do you believe? Trump. He said, who are you going to believe, Putin? He said, well, I believe him over my own intelligence, which he doesn't have any of. So we can go right there with that one. So and then the second lady saying that she's not intelligent. Hell, I don't know anybody to go through college and get a master's degree and then become an attorney general without any education. And then for the other lady that said She ran as an Indian. That's part of her heritage. So she ran as an Indian, but her father's Jamaican. He's a black Jamaican. You can look at it and tell she's a black woman. So for all you people out there who believe that Donald Trump is the solution, God bless you. Because you know why? He's not. Hell, he gave you what you had 4 years ago. And when everybody asks me, are you better off than you are 4 years ago, you damn right I am. Because 4 years ago, I couldn't see my damn family. I was bunkered down in my damn house just going back and forth to work. And for all you dumbasses who tell me how cheap the gas was, guess why it was cheap, dumbasses? It was cheap because we weren't going anywhere. You couldn't go anywhere. People were not driving. When I went to work, on average, it took me 30 minutes. When we were going through the pandemic, it took me 15 because there were no cars on the road. Look, people, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Think about where you were 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. We were in the middle of a pandemic. In the middle of a pandemic, which this dumbass knew that we had, and it started in November. He knew it in November. He let all the people know about it in March. Is when we shut the country down. We lost a million people as compared to what Canada lost. They didn't lose a million people. They lost 400,000. It was going to be inevitable that we were going to lose people, but we lost a million. And are you better off 4 years ago? You damn right I'm better off than I was 4 years ago.
And when the one said, she doesn't understand our struggle. Are you effing kidding me? Kamala Harris locked up families. Oh, this is the same guy that wanted five black men, innocent black men, executed. What the hell is wrong with you stupid, ignorant folks? If you are black and voting for Trump, you are ignorant. I don't care. You don't like it? Change the damn channel. Unbelievable. I can't believe this. And you have these people, and there are folks who are listening to these fools. Oh, TikTok. And I'm glad President Obama broke that mess down. I almost said S-H-I-T. He broke it down. He said, basically, look, we handed them the playbook because we dealt with the H1 virus. We dealt with Ebola. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what did he say, Mr. Elias? 60% of those people did not have to die. 600,000 people died because of his incompetence. What they should be doing is throwing some handcuffs on his ass.
Yeah.
There are people who was his chief of staff said that. We're going to talk about that later on. But there are people that work with him. This is the first time in American history, Jerome, that over 100 people that worked in the president's administration is not supporting him. What do we need to do, bro? What? Talk to us, man. Listen, man. We the last line of defense, bro. We gotta say something that's gonna change these fools' minds. So come on, Jerome. Come on, brother. We got five minutes, man. Everybody, come on. Let's come up with something, Jerome. Let's give me a speech, man. Talk to these ignorant black folks who are stupid and who thinks this white man who don't give a damn about them can change their lives. They're not looking at any of the numbers.
Yeah. First of all, we can't say anything to them because if they need us to give them a speech at this point, they are lost. If you have not been around during his presidency, you didn't see the, the pandemic, you didn't see him throwing
paper towels
at people in Puerto Rico. If you didn't see any of that, and didn't see him, chant lock her up when Hillary Clinton broke no laws, and didn't see him get convicted of like sexual assault, and you didn't see him steal money, and you didn't see all of those files and stuff in his house, you didn't see him having the Chinese people at Mar-a-Lago and all of those showing them. Just confidential documents. If that can't convince you, then there is no convincing, because you're comparing. I don't care if you like her or not. It has nothing to do with that. It has something to do about this guy putting everybody in the Stone Ages, going backwards and him being a criminal. You're about to elect a flat-out criminal and saying, and you're picking on the fact that who her mother and father is. Like, that is, that doesn't make sense. So I have no speech for anybody like that. They're not serious, and they're not thinking. And like I said, they're watching Fox News, and the reason that they're getting hyped up is because conservatives are loving the fact that you're talking about Harris opposed to talking about the criminal who still has to go to court, who still has all of these violations and confidential documents in there and is trying to change the rules for himself. The only reason that dude want to be president is so he don't have to go to jail.
Ooh, you better say that again. You better say that again. That's the only reason why. And check that. She worked at McDonald's, and she didn't pretend to work at McDonald's like he did. Mr. Elias, man, come on, man. Give me a closing argument, brother. Let's get these people. Well, let's see, can we get two to come on board? Come on, bro. Talk to me.
Well, hey, man, for those who don't realize it, when Joe Biden said lock him up, and he said, I mean, politically, hell, and Donald Trump said, see, they're coming after me. Man, how many times did you say lock him up? How many times did you say lock her up when Hillary Clinton was running for president? How many times did you have Joe Biden try to have Joe Biden when you were president locked up? You're the biggest hypocrite ever. And then now you're crying because somebody said lock him up? They should lock your ass up. I don't care. You're a criminal. You got 33 charges against you in New York. They should lock your ass up. And for all those people who don't understand, if he doesn't become president, Georgia is coming after him for what he did. Not only Georgia, but the special counsel is coming after him for what he did. Jack Smith is coming after him for what he did. These people are not playing. These people are not playing. So for all you guys who think that he's the greatest thing since sliced bread, do your researches. And for all you young brothers who keep trying to tell me Trump gave y'all all this checks, he didn't give you a jack. That was Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats. He was against it. But you know what he was smart enough to do? Wait and put his name on it. So all the dumb Negroes and the dumb folks out there will say, hey, look, Donald Trump gave you some money.
Yes.
He didn't do a damn thing. He didn't do none of that. So all you people who think he gave you money, he didn't. He did not.
Yes.
Do your research. Research.
Yes. Yes, my brother.
Don't forget they postponed his court date in New York State to let those other court cases go through.
Yes.
So you still have
him here. There it is, brother. Well, yeah. So y'all listen. Y'all take that. And we'll be right back to give y'all some more of this on the other side. Woo! Get him, brother. Get him.
Once upon a time, in a place called Mzansi, the people loved driving cars everywhere. They used lots and lots of electricity and chopped down many trees for firewood. And then a very strange thing happened. The weather began to change. In some places there were droughts where before there was rain. In other places the rivers flooded. The grown-ups realized they were contributing to the strange weather. They discovered if they used clean energy and less electricity, they could save Mzansi for their children.
What happened then?
How the story unfolds is up to each and every one of us. Switch off, recycle, change. Help save tomorrow, today.
Online radio at its best.
As Donald Trump has defined it so far, it includes every one of the 81 million people who voted for Joe Biden and will probably vote for Kamala Harris. That's the enemy within, according to Donald Trump. And Bret Baier lied about that. When he showed a clip of Donald Trump, he chose to show not the video of what Donald Trump actually said, but he showed instead, knowingly and corruptly, a ridiculous tape of Donald Trump on the Fox network earlier today claiming that he was never threatening anyone and laughing about it. And Bret Baier took that to be a fact, that Donald Trump never threatened anyone. That is the kind of Trump campaign operative junk that Bret Baier sullied himself with and was throwing into his interview with the vice president tonight. And the vice president very forcefully responded. Why, if he's as bad as you say, that half of this country is now supporting this person who could be the 47th president of the United States, why is that happening?
This is an election for president of the United States. It's not supposed to be easy.
I know, but
it's not supposed to be. It is not supposed to be a cakewalk for anyone.
So are they misguided, the 50%? Are they stupid? What is it?
Oh, God, I would never say that about the American people. And in fact, if you listen to Donald Trump, if you watch any of his rallies, he's the one who tends to demean and belittle and diminish the American people. He's the one who talks about an enemy within. An enemy within. Talking about the American people. Suggesting he would turn the American military on the American people.
We asked that question to the former president today. Harris Faulkner had a town hall, and this is how he responded.
I heard about that. They were saying I was, like, threatening. I'm not threatening anybody. They're the ones doing the threatening. They do phony investigations. I've been investigated more than Alphonse Capone. He was the greatest gangster. No, it's
right.
True.
We've
no, but think of it. It's called weaponization of government. It's a terrible thing.
So,
Brett, I'm sorry, and with all due respect, that clip was not what he has been saying about the enemy within that he has repeated when he's speaking about the American people. That's not what you just showed.
Well, he was asked about that
specific... No, that's not what you just showed in all fairness and respect to you.
I'm telling you that was the question that we asked him.
You didn't show that, and here's the bottom line. He has repeated it many times, and you and I both know that. And you and I both know that he has talked about turning the American military on the American people. He has talked about going after people who are engaged in peaceful protest. He has talked about locking people up because they disagree with him. This is a democracy.
Welcome back in. 347-850-1272. It's 36 minutes after the hour. You're listening to The Serious Out on a beautiful Sunday. Once again, fake news. We weren't on the air last week, but I wanted to spend a few minutes to talk about this. So, Mr. Elias, you know, at the end of the day, she really went after him. She didn't let him put that stuff out there. She went after him, and so and kudos to her, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, man, he had to come back on later and give a half-assed apology and say, well, I misspoke, but, hey, in all fairness, you lied. You knew you were lying. That's just like I watched when I was in Fairfield, Indiana this weekend watching ESPN, and they got a clip out with Charlamagne Tha God and DJ Envy talking about Kamala Harris, and it's fake because he's come out and endorsed her. He's come out and endorsed her, but they said, and it's the clip says, and I would never endorse her. You lying. Here's another fake one that they put out. And this is what they do. This is what Donald Trump does. So, you know, I think all lies when you come to a commercial or whatever you're putting out should be vanquished. You get rid of them. If it's a lie, don't say it. Don't even put it out there on the news. But it is what it is. That's how dirty politics are right now.
Yeah, you know, Jerome, you say this all the time. Fox News is not news. I mean. When you know for a fact that this man is lying, and the part that really got me, if you know, I'm hoping by now you've seen that clip, audience. The part that really got me was the look on his face when she said to him, "You know that's not what you know what he's been saying. You know it, Brett. You know it. Stop. You know what's going on here." And he had this look on his face like, damn, she's right. You know what I'm saying? He did. He had a look on his face that, you know, damn, she's right. And even he admitted after that interview that, hey, you know what, she scored some political points in that interview. And if you listen to that lie that he told the very next day, because what he tried to say was, well, we had the wrong clip up. I wanted to show the clip of him on Fox with Maria Bocanero, whatever her damn name is. He said, I wanted to show that clip and then play the Harris Faulkner clip after that. Go back and listen to what he said to her when he introduced that clip. He said, we asked the former president that question.
He was with
Harris Faulkner, and this was his response. So if you quote unquote claim that they played the wrong, then why didn't you say, well, here's a clip of him with Maria Bartiromo and then with Frank? He didn't say that. He had to come back, and I think his morals kicked in a little bit and said, man, you know what? I don't know, Jerome. I just think, man, that
I don't
this
think
is
his morals. Yeah, I don't
maybe
think his
didn't.
Morals kicked in.
Yeah, you're right.
Right, because what happened on that news network, they needed a clip of her saying that those people are wrong so that they can use it in a loop. They were setting her up for a soundbite, right? And so that's what I'm saying. And I'm in a Cat Williams school of this, that all lies will be revealed in 24. Like, I think that people should know that.
That's a good impression of him, too, by the way.
Sorry about that. Sorry about
that was good.
The non-Cat Williams fans on that one.
Yes.
But at the same time, seriously, we need to know that these folks have been lying since Fox News started. What have they been getting sued for lying? They lied about the voting machines. They lied. Giuliani brought him on there, and he lied and lost everything. You know, I don't know if you guys seen that in the news. That those election workers are getting everything because he played around in New York State, and they're like, you cannot defame people and then think you can just get away with it. And they're making him cash in everything he got from his condos to his houses, everything, right?
Yeah.
He lied on Fox News because they let them lie on Fox News.
Yeah.
And so we have to kind of look at it for what it's worth to say, I don't think that when people say, well, they do have some news people and that they should go on Fox, we have to, as a society, start shunning those things that we know are bad. We just can't keep tolerating them, right? If you know that people are lying to you, why? If you're watching for entertainment, that's one thing. If you're watching to get news and information, I wouldn't trust Jack Squat that came out of Sinclair, Newsmax, any of those fools, because they know exactly what they're doing. They're implanting something in you to make you believe something. So, I wouldn't believe any of those fools for any of that.
Yeah, and Sinclair, keep in mind, they own a lot of the local news stations. You know, we talked about that here, how they were all required to read this conservative paragraph about, you know, the election at that point. So trust me, Sinclair is part of it as
better
well.
Range than, yeah, they have a better range than Fox because they have the local stations. So people who say, no, I don't listen to national news, I look at my local. Sinclair is requiring that they tell the same lies that they do on Fox.
Right.
It's the same people.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a good point. That's a good pull by you. That is a damn good pull by you. 347-850-1272. Be right back after we play some more music.
Let's stop walking around. Today, nearly one in five Americans are living with a mental health condition, from our children and grandparents to our veterans, coworkers, and neighbors. For all of us, our mental well-being is just as important as our physical health. But unfortunately, most of us don't know how to recognize the signs that someone is in emotional distress. And so many of those who are having difficulty can't get the help they need. And together, we can change this. We can start by visiting changedirection.org and learning the five signs that may mean someone is struggling and needs help. And then it's up to us to show compassion, to reach out, connect, help folks find the hope and the support they need. Together, we can change the story about mental health in America. Together, we can change direction.
Online radio at its best.
347-850-1272 is our calling number. 347-850-1272. It is the Sirius Hour on a beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. I know we're saying good morning a little late today, but that's okay. As long as we say good morning, I'm here with my boys, my bros. The smartest man in the world, Mr. Jerome Esprit, is in the house. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, man. I'm good. How are you? And by the way, thanks for playing that remix of that Ice Cube song. I just wanted to put that out there.
I was going to say that. You took my thunder, boy. You took my thunder.
My bad. My bad.
So you youngins, there it is. There's the original.
I know. I know I'm young. But okay. Fine. New song by them folks.
That's a good one, man.
I don't know who remixed it.
Yeah, who was that singing on the background? Is that what's the brother's name? The guy that's out there now.
Hey, dog.
Yeah. Is that the Weeknd singing background? Man, shut up. That's the original.
Yes.
Mr. Elias, the man who gets the first and last word is here, man. Brother, how you?
I'm good. Good morning to you and Lon. Good morning, Nasta and Lon. Good morning, Mama B. Lon. Good morning, Kathleen. Lon. Good morning, Real Dia. Lon. Good morning, Rich Sister. Lon. Good morning, Marion the Music. And Marion the Music, that first song was Don't Talk to Me That Way by Victor Lundberg. And the last song was the Isley Brothers' Footsteps in the Dark.
It was an Ice Cube remix. You messing it up.
Can we
say hello to some folks in the chat, if you don't mind, sir, if you are in the chat?
By all means, we got Covina, man, that's in there with us.
Covina, man, what's up? Hey, listen, we're running late, so we're not going to do our last segment of news. We'll just jump into this last topic, spin it around a little bit, kick it around a little bit before we hand you your Sunday back. Football Sunday, of course, as always. But one thing I want to definitely talk about a little bit before we get into this topic. So I went to get my car inspected yesterday, and I was sitting down. I was talking to this young lady. She was telling me about some of the hardships she had been going through. And she says, well, you know, sir, she says, I said something to her. She said, well, sir, you know, listen, I've been through a lot. I've seen a whole lot. I said, really? She said, yeah, I'm 59 years old, and so I've kind of lived this life and stuff. I said, huh? I said, you know, I'm 60. She said, what? I said, yeah. She said, oh, my God, you look so great for your age. She said, my God, I thought you were like 42. I said, God bless you. Oh, anyway, it's time to get into our last topic.
So she was Stevie Wonder's little sister. I take it.
Whatever, clown. Take this with you.
Online radio at its best.
As Donald Trump has defined it so far, it includes every one of the 81 million people who voted for Joe Biden and will probably vote for Kamala Harris. That's the enemy within, according to Donald Trump. And Bret Baier lied about that.
Well, he did, but that's not what we're supposed to be talking about. We were talking about, man, I don't know how we got that clip mixed up. But anyway, we have a few minutes left anyway. So real quick, let's talk about the comment that, you know, a long time ago, Jerome, I remember. First of all, Jerome, I think you was trying to throw some shade. What were you trying to say, man, before the clip kicked in? Because I want you to get your shade out, dog. Go on, get your shade out, man.
I don't remember. Oh, I throw no shade.
No. Jerome said something before the clip kicked in.
Yeah, I said maybe she was asking for gas money. That's all I said.
No, see, that's shade. That's all right. That's a black on black crime. That's all right. I just want you to know
you
that
was want
black
to
on black.
Go with me down my dead end street.
I'm gonna make it do what it do, baby. Yeah.
You go kick rocks. All right. So listen, last few minutes we have left. Let's you know, I remember Jerome a long time ago. If a person that was running for president said that they were in love with the Russian leader, that you would automatically be thrown out. It'd be like the scene at the beginning of Rifleman. Remember they took mm-hmm. his stripes off and threw him out the fort. Or was that Brandon? I can't remember. But either way, that used to be a disqualifying factor. But now it's like, hey, Trump being Trump. And I heard something the other day that I thought was interesting, how they talk about that we're grading on two different scales. We talk about the fact that Kamala Harris is not doing enough tough interviews. She does tough interviews. Oh, Kamala Harris, she's not having enough rallies. She do all these different things. But Trump is doing the complete opposite. And we're grading on two different scales. Because they're holding her to the standard of what a presidential candidate should be versus what this guy is doing. She's released her medical records. He hasn't. But yet still, the government wants women to turn their medical records in just in case they decide to go to another state and have an abortion. Brother, I'll give you 60 seconds, dog. Talk to me, man, because we got to say goodbye.
Well, you're right. The problem is that we always have two double standards on each party, right? The Democrats are overly concerned about everybody's business, and the Republicans don't care as long as it aligns with them hurting someone else. So when you start talking about, you know, Trump as, you know, being immoral and he's doing all this, you know, sexual predator stuff, grabbing women by the crotch and all this, if you remotely look at a woman wrong on a Democratic side, they ask you to resign. They're not even close to, you know, close to equity when it comes to them even having questions about what they want to do or how they should be looked at for qualification purposes. So yeah. I wouldn't pay that any attention. I just want to remind everybody that white men actually vote more Democrat than they do Republican as well. So our notions of how the electorate work is kind of wrong, and we need to kind of understand that those women issues are going to play out amongst white women and is going to help Kamala. And then at the same time that when we talk about us getting out to vote, we vote at a high enough number that we will make a difference as black folks. So don't believe the hype that you're watching on news. And it looks closer than it is. It's not going to be a Joe Biden. It's kind of blowout. But it is looking better for her.
Yeah, that's good stuff right there. That's good stuff. All right, hold up, Mr. Elias, before I get your responses. Let me do this.
Online radio at its best.
All right, so, yeah, it's time to... We're at that part of the show, but we're going to continue to rap and clap as we close the show out. So, Mr. Elias, your comments on this whole thing about, praising Hitler and all this other crazy nonsense.
Anytime, I'm looking at some of these people when they say he's going to be an autocrat, and he praises Hitler and said Hitler has great qualities. And John Kelly came out and said, this dude is going to be, he's a fascist. He's going to be a dictator. He's going to do all this stuff, and people are still sweeping it up under the carpet like, so what? How many candidates can get away from that? If she says something wrong or walks wrong or laughs, she's wrong. It's just two different double standards, man. And people ought to realize what's going on. Like I said, the two different double standards are, he's been saying lock her up or lock him up for the longest. Somebody said it against him, and what does he do? He goes, hey, crap. This is dumb, man. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I have no words. I really don't, man. I have no words for what we're going through. So, Jerome, man, 30 seconds, brother. Give me your final thoughts on what we talked about today or what's on your mind.
Yeah, you know what? I'll use my final thoughts on this. That, yes, it is true that there are flat double standards in life generally. But this is egregious where you And he can call you a name, but you call him a name, and now he's playing the victim. So don't fall for that. He's playing to a certain audience. He's a joke. And do what you got to do. And I'm sure LES will reiterate this. And I'm going to leave my last couple of seconds to LES so that he can tell you what you should be doing next Tuesday.
Mr. LES, the floor is yours.
Look, folks, I get out and voted the first day of the election because that's how important it is to me. And I'm telling you, my knee was shot because I get up and exercise, but my knee was swollen. But I got my crippled ass up there and I went and voted because that's how important it is to me. So get out and vote, folks. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice.
Yeah, good stuff. And let me tell you something. I would criticize the way Texas, before you could just vote all Democrat, all Republican, all whatever. And so now the state of Texas, thinking that they're trying to do something to, to distract Democrats, they say now you just have to go through every page. Well, I'm glad I did that because there are some Democrats in the state of Texas who are supporting Ted Cruz. So I was able to go through and not vote for those bastards. So you know what, Greg Abbott, you thought you was doing something, but you hurt some of your peoples, okay? You may have hurt some of your peoples, okay? And on a close, another note, you heard from Ernest earlier in the show. We wish Ernest the best. Ernest, man, God bless you, brother, and I'll be checking in with you as you fight this struggle, man. It's tough, but keep your heads up.
What's going
on
with Ernest?
All right. Man, go back and listen to the show. I'll talk to you after the show. Meantime, Mr. LES, if it's Sunday, we're talking serious stuff. What time is it, my friend?
It's time for the serious side of the J. Ralph Show.
Folks, it's been a pleasure to serve you. You need to be back here on Sunday because that's the last Sunday before voting, and we're going to give it to you raw. So for Mr. LES, for Jerome, for Vanessa, for Momo Beezy, for all of my folks, my peoples, and for Ernest especially, I'm J. Ryle saying make it a wonderful work week. Remember, if we're talking serious stuff, it is the serious side. God bless. We'll see you next week. Get out and vote. I did.
Online radio at its best. Online radio at its best.
Hey, good stuff.
If you're ready, map of the South.
Let's do this.
I'm telling you, I am first very honored that you would join me tonight.
He has a very limited time spot, so we want to bring in Mr. Alan Sarrell right away.
Hey, how are you, Kathleen?
You know what? I'm going to make you do what it do, baby.
Man, what's crack-a-lackin', baby? What's crack-a-lackin'?
It's time for the serious side of the J. Ralph Show.
Don't try to call me out, princess. You can take your love and true purpose and stick it. She's a bitch.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.